Hello and welcome to the Majlis, the podcast by Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, focusing on Central Asia. I am Mohammed Tahir, your host here in Washington, D.C. Farid Niyazov, Presidential Chief of Staff of Kyrgyzstan, is home while his resignation letter is still pending. Considered by many as the former President Atambayev's man in the presidential palace, in a way, he's supposed to keep an eye on President Jeenbekov. It is unclear what, when, where, and how things came to this point, but whatever the cause of his resignation, it certainly shows cracks in the Atambayev-Jeenbekov alliance. It's happening as President Jeenbekov's administration has just turned 100 days old. So, in the light of Niyazov's pending resignation, today we are here to discuss President Jeenbekov's report card involving his performance in the first semester of him taking the office. To talk about this, from Bishkek, I'm joined by Edil Beysalov, who's a civil society and political activist. Although he doesn't want to be reminded about this, but for the sake of today's discussion, it's important to declare that Edil was once in Niyazov's chair as the chief of presidential staff during former Kyrgyz President Ruza Otunbayeva's tenure. We are also delighted to have Aliya Suranova. She is a Bishkek-based independent journalist like Edil. She also doesn't want to be reminded, but until recently, she too briefly worked in the office of presidential chief of staff during Niyazov's term. Sorry, guys, couldn't resist to mention this. And as always, I am also joined by Bruce Panier. He's the proud and current president of Kishlok. Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia blog. We also call it Kishlok Owazi, and he's not shy talking about this. So thank you, colleagues, for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good to be back.
Thank you. So, Edil, today, Jeenbekov's 100 days in office is our primary topic, but can't resist to start the discussion with a developing story of Farid Niyazov, presidential chief of staff. What is happening? Why he's attempting to resign? You know these things better than most of us. So tell us the backstory behind his offering of resignation.
Well, obviously, the winning candidate in the last presidential elections, President Sooronbay Jeenbekov, is the candidate of Almazbek Atambayev. Almazbek Atambayev endorsed him, nominated him, pushed him through to the victory. You know, it's at the cost of ruining his relations with Kazakhstan and burning all bridges. And when Sooronbay Jeenbekov inaugurated, it was not a coincidence that Farid Niyazov, number one assistant of Almazbek Atambayev, who formerly chaired the campaign of Sooronbay Jeenbekov, also was appointed as chief of staff to the new president.
Nice.
Sooronbay Jeenbekov couldn't even change until recently, not a single head of department in his own personal apparatus, the staff of president. And so, of course, for all observers, Farid Niyazov was seen as an instrument, an embodiment of Atambayev's presence, that the former president controlled every paper on the desk of the current president. So this is a very big story for us. As you said, it is developing. We still do not know and do not understand if it is on the personal and some petty disagreements between Farid Niyazov, or does it symbolize break of the new president from the control of Atambayev?
Okay. Aliya, you haven't worked side by side with Niyazov in the same room, but you were in the same building when he was there. Also, your term in the administration was so brief and goes back to summer of 2016. So with all these disclaimers, the fact is Niyazov was still there. So what have you been hearing from your sources about this development? Anything to add what Edil has just said?
Not really. Well, the thing is that after I left the president's office, I haven't really been in touch with my former colleagues as much. So I don't really have that much of, insider information. But in general, I agree with Edil. I think the presence of Mr. Niyazov really did mean that, the spirit of Atambayev was still there, if I can say so. Mm. And it was kind of symbolic that it was a sign for people that the former president is still there and he still sort of like rules things. Mm. And I think people had the feeling that the new president, Sooronbay Jeenbekov's presidency is more like, like the Queen of England. he makes this business trips. He travels around. He shakes hands with other presidents. But people believe that major decisions and strategic, moves are still made by the former president.
Let's look into this from the different aspect to understand what's really happening. I know Niyazov was ordered to rest, but what he's doing since his resignation? Also, have you noticed anything particular in his reaction or the reaction of his supporters involving the discussion about his attempted departure, Edil Aliyev? Feel free.
We could have dismissed it as just a hiccup, that nothing serious is happening. But the most interesting part of it is the whole breakup is accompanied by a series of leaks and articles, and including on the editorial pages of Aki Press, of our leading paper of record. We do know that Aki Press is basically controlled and very close to Farid Niyazov personally and Almazbek Atambayev in general. They control, of course, the website of K-News, for example. And the series of articles, they was expressed. They are talking about it. It's not me, the critic of Atambayev, who is interested in spinning the story out of proportion. So, but it is themselves who are saying that actually the magnitude that Farid Niyazov was excluded from the decision making, that Sooronbay Jeenbekov, with the support of his family members in the parliament, with the support of some who they call corrupt elements, are building restoration of the Bakiyev regime. These exact terms, this is actually themselves who are revealing that the breakup is taking place, and there is very serious under the carpet fight of bulldogs that is taking place.
Aliyev, is it the way you are reading this?
I would rather agree than disagree.
Yeah, Edil is an influential person there.
Yes.
let's see, Bruce. So what is it that Niyazov is trying to achieve by this, by the leaks that Edil has just mentioned, and also the fact that he's attempting to resign? What's his objective here?
Well, obviously Edil and Aliyev are better positioned to know, to get more information about what's happening. But I mean, it was clear from the very first news that he wanted to resign, but his resignation wasn't accepted, that there was some huge problem going on between Niyazov and Jeenbekov, and really between their two camps. So, and Edil rightly mentioned some of these articles that have come out in the press, which is leaning toward Niyazov and Atambayev. So it's obvious they had some kind of problem on there, and it was a kind of a clumsy attempt to smooth over it by suggesting that maybe Niyazov should just take a week off from work and this would all work itself out somewhere or another. Clearly there are some issues, and I'm not surprised at that, to tell you the truth, because Jeenbekov is supposed to be the president of the country, and he's got to get the country moving forward. He left, no matter what he said during campaigning or right after the election, about I'm going to continue Atambayev's policies, and the country is going to be run pretty much the way it has been for the last few years. The fact is that Kyrgyzstan isn't moving forward very quickly, and Atambayev burned, Adil mentioned he burned bridges with Kazakhstan, but I mean, he burned a lot of bridges before he left. And if Jeenbekov wants to lead effectively and get Kyrgyzstan closer to regional partners and international partners, he's going to have to cast off the baggage that Atambayev left him with right before he left office and handed everything over to Jeenbekov.
In a way, you are also suggesting that, in fact, this might not be Niyazov resigning, but he's pushed to resign?
I wouldn't say so much pushed to resign as there might be some policies that Jeenbekov is absolutely convinced he's going to have to pursue. That might be running into conflict with things that Niyazov thinks they should do.
And Mohammed, the thing is, actually, that de facto, of course, the breakup already took place. Because it's the way they accompanied, for example, Jeenbekov's press service, issued a statement. They could have denied the news. They could have just said, no, this did not take place.
That's interesting.
President Jeenbekov has full trust in his chief of staff. No, they actually issued a statement that they confirmed that they received the resignation request, that he was told to take a week of rest. You know, it's humiliating in terms of how it was framed.
Yeah.
And the fact of the matter remains that Farid Niyazov could appear next week. He could attend, you know, Nowruz celebrations. He could stay there for 5 years. But what we already know, that he will be only a nominal chief of staff. And that's what also we hear from the members of parliament, from the notables who, you know, receive audience with the president, Jeenbekov, that he's actually, as a point of contact, he is mentioning other people in his staff. You know, he's excluding Farid Niyazov from the active decision-making. And of course, you know, what Bruce, you know, we've discussed this, and I think also on this podcast, it was extremely naive for Almazbek Atambayev to overestimate his stature and to think that he will be the, you know, the eternal leader of the national leader of Kyrgyzstan for ages and continue to control Kyrgyzstan from the shadows. This is Central Asia, this is Kyrgyzstan, and we've seen this is not possible. And actually, this is only the very beginning. But when this structure is will be coming apart, it will collapse, of course, very quickly. And we could also discuss, of course, what the public opinion in Kyrgyzstan is actually looking for signs, for the next signs of Jeenbekov consolidating his power.
What are those signs? Alia, you want to add something into this?
Yeah, I was just thinking that recently I had a conversation with several active citizens. So they were assuming that probably in about maybe a year or two, Sooronbay Jeenbekov would actually slowly come out of Atambayev's shadow and influence. And they also talk a lot about his brother, Aslanbek Jeenbekov, if I'm not mistaken, right? He was the
member of parliament.
Yeah, I think he was the ex-speaker of parliament, right? He's the member of parliament at the moment. And people say that he is a very, a very influential and powerful person and has a lot of influence over his brother. And a lot of people actually believe that slowly Aslanbek Jeenbekov will take over, you know, this sort of like unofficial power. He sort of like will take it away from Atambayev. And here some people believe that this is not really a struggle between Sooronbay Jeenbekov and Atambayev. Rather, this is more like, a fight for power between Atambayev and Jeenbekov's brother, little brother Asil. I can't really claim that this is really happening, but some activists believe that Aslanbek Jeenbekov is more like aiming to rule the country behind his brother.
Well, then I think, Alia, what's going on is, of course, it's a popular story and myth-making that actually people are looking for familiar actors and roles. In
after Bakiev's family, you mean?
Like, yes, in the Bakiev family, people used to demonize Janish Bakiev for his son. And actually, it is our national character. We don't want to say that the president or our leader is bad. We need to claim that it wasn't Askar Akayev a bad president. It was his wife or his children. The same story is about Kurmanbek Bakiev. And I think it repeats, of course, about looking for some sinister figure of Sooronbay Jeenbekov. But if we will discuss this, Aslanbek Jeenbekov is, of course, he is a very important figure in the constellation of the current politics, not only because he's a younger brother, but because he's a former speaker and he is the person in the parliament. He's a current member of parliament who can consolidate parliamentary majority and maybe even super majority on behalf of the new president. An interesting fact is that President Atambayev, just before he stepped down from his presidency, he actively tried to push out Aslanbek Jeenbekov of the Kyrgyz politics and in exile, in a way. And, you know, he wanted to appoint him as ambassador to Kazakhstan. But Aslanbek Jeenbekov didn't agree to be exiled, and he stays on in the parliament.
When all these are happening, as far as I know, Atambayev did not publicly respond about this. I'm talking about the Niyazov's attempted resignation. What does that tell you, Alia?
Well, since he his term has finished, he hasn't really spoken out publicly, as far as I remember. So I don't think he's going to comment anything. I think at this point he's just doing whatever he's doing and trying to be sort of like stay in the shadow, I think.
Okay. Bruce, you were taught on this?
Well, you know, the fact that they're kind of trying to contain this is interesting. We've already heard that it's clear enough that something is going on, but it hasn't blown up yet anyway. But you kind of get the feeling that this is that we're going to have several more rounds of this kind of stuff. And I see there's already rumors around that maybe the Prime Minister Isakov might be not long for his position either. You know, so this is the kind of thing that happens when these stories start. I mean, Kyrgyzstan is very vibrant politics. Uh-huh. Things move. Yeah. They're always moving almost. So, you know, one event like this, Niyazov wanted to resign? What does that mean and stuff? Sets off a chain reaction of speculation about what's coming here. You know, I mean, we've said on the show before that sooner or later, Jan Bekov has got to have his own course and pursue it. Mm-hmm. You can't follow Atambayev's lead. The country really didn't progress that much under Atambayev. The best thing you can say about that, most people anyway, can say about Atambayev's term as president is that the country was more or less stable. But that's it. Mm-hmm. It didn't progress forward economically or politically that much. So it was clear that Jan Bekov was going to have to have some other course, and to do that, he was going to have to start getting rid of some of the people that he inherited, if for lack of a better word, from Atambayev. And like I said, I had always figured that when it came time to replace the prime minister, that would be the best opportunity for him to move and put his own people in and start pursuing his own policies.
Yeah, it's understandable that Jean Bekov wants to put his own stamp into things. But then also, we were earlier discussing, Alia and Idil, that this kind of disagreement reached already into family members are, you know, involved in this. In this case, why Jean Bekov just didn't accept Niyazov's resignation? Please read Jean Bekov's brain for me. What he was thinking when he said, just go rest for a week and come back?
Well, actually, you know, it's a very curious question, Mohammed. You know, I don't want to overestimate my own influence and my part in this whole role. But, you know, quite a few people said that it was exactly because I demanded, without knowing, and I swear to God, I did not know that Farid Niyazov had submitted his resignation that morning to Sooronbay Jeenbekov, that it was exactly because of my very critical and very public demand for fire Farid Niyazov that day, that actually that saved Farid Niyazov in the administration. And there is a very curious story. Why did I demand Farid Niyazov's removal that day? Because they published an official necrologue for a very prominent statesman who had died. And you know, there is a usual tradition that all this nomenklatura, they have to sign the official necrologue and it has to be an official funeral. And that day, the presidential administration distributed this in memoriam, and it actually contained a list of signatories. And in violation of the state protocol, the name of the former president Atambayev was put in that list of signatories immediately after the current president, and above the serving prime minister, the speaker, the chairman of the Supreme Court and Constitutional Court. According to our protocol and according to our tradition, Almazbek Atambayev's name should be just above the name of another former president, Roza Otunbayeva. And of course, I had to react very publicly and very eagerly because I said, this is usurpation of power. Mm-hmm. You know, why is the former president, you know, is being provided place and such an honor that is in violation of democracy, in violation of our constitution? And I, you know, that's the story. But as I said, Farid Niyazov can reappear next week. He can stay there for 5 years. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
It doesn't matter.
Okay. Let's see. So it's been already 20 plus minutes since we started this discussion, and we did not even yet come to our real topic. Kyrgyzstan is such an interesting country, you know. So now Niyazov's resignation coincides with the Jeenbekov's 100 days in office. Let's get into this straight after a very short break. Hey everyone, before we get into the second part of the show, just a quick reminder that if you really like Mejlis podcast, there's a real chance that you will also like my other radio show that's called Gandhara Podcast. The show discusses latest developments in Pakistan and Afghanistan from local perspective. And the podcast is published in every second week on Radio Free Europe Radio Liberty's Gandhara website. It's a totally must-follow discussion for foreign policy nerds with interest in the region. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia podcast, we are discussing the attempted resignation of top Atambayev loyalist in Jeenbekov's government. His name is Farid Niyazov, Chief of Presidential Administration. And what does this mean to Atambayev-Jeenbekov alliance, as the Jeenbekov administration has just turned 100 days old? Joining me in the discussion are from Bishkek, Edilbay Salov, who's a civic and political activist, and also from Bishkek, Alia Suranova, is joining us, who's an independent journalist and columnist, and from Prague, Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia blog, Kishlok Wazi, is with us. And I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis here in Washington, D.C. Once again, thank you, colleagues, for joining us in the discussion today. So let's leave Niyazov behind. His resignation is certainly one milestone that many predicted was writing on the wall, and he is one of many high-profile staffers in the current administration left over from Atambayev era. So if Jeenbekov had to put his own stamp on things, he had to make certain changes. If this is what we are seeing, Niyazov's resignation is indeed one signal. And Adil, perhaps in our previous discussions, at least this was my feeling, that you think his resignation also represents Atambayev's gradual removal from the position of influence. So we will see. But when you look into Jeenbekov's 100 days in office, what else do you see has happened, has changed for the better or for the worst?
Well, you know, the most notable about first few steps of Sooronbay Jeenbekov, if you would ask and poll not only politician but across you know, the Kyrgyz public opinion, I think people will point to his speech at the Security Council meeting, where President Jeenbekov criticized law enforcement agencies and the general prosecutor and the chairman of the national security for failing with the fight against corruption. And Sooronbay Jeenbekov reaffirmed that he is going to fight corruption, and he demanded that corruption needs to be fought. And actually he called and he succeeded in the dismissal of the head of the anti-corruption service. And as we learned later, there are great purges going on in this agency, which was the instrument of Almazbek Atambayev. Only because of this anti-corruption agency's active work over the last few years did Atambayev, you know, by using this terror of imprisonment, that he succeeded to clean the politics of Kyrgyzstan and reestablish himself as unsurpassed. I will call him usurper. I have called him an usurper. I've accused him of violating all of his democratic pledges. So I will just go ahead and repeat it. And of course, he expected that Sooronbay Jeenbekov will continue only as a nominal figure, that the main part of government, it will be actually the cabinet, which is led by a 40-year-old former clerk, which was, you know, catapulted to the stratosphere of the Kyrgyz politics, you know, this Sapar Isakov, the current prime minister. You know, he has only one voter, and that voter is Almazbek Atambayev. You know, he has some support, of course, now after he has served prime minister for a while, but I think this is not yet finished, and we don't know how it's going to finish.
Alia, what's your thought on that? We are talking about Jeenbekov's work in the past 100 days in office. What are the highlights from your point of view?
I think the highlight is that there are no highlights. Because we haven't really heard of his, you know, how to say, real strategic decisions or some radical changes, you know, nothing. It's more like we hear about the prime minister, Sapar Isakov, who goes here and there, you know. It looks like he's the one who sort of, you know, like takes care of all the issues in the country. As for Jeenbekov, it's more like he's going on this presidential trips, and then what else? There's nothing really, you know, during Atambayev times, it was more interesting because every other week he would release, you know, like a very epic speech and everybody would discuss it and everybody would be, you know, going crazy in the media. But as for Sooronbay Jeenbekov, nothing really has changed, as Edil has mentioned already.
I will interrupt you and I will say that Sooronbay Jeenbekov already is enjoying huge support of the Kyrgyz public, not only the voters who voted for him, but across the political spectrum, exactly because he is acting with dignity. He is he respects the dignity of the office. And remember, when he went to this the first summit of the CIS, that people admired him. People who were dismissing him and, you know, very critical about him during the presidential campaign, like they were saying about talking about him like a redneck from Osh and some like, you know, a kolkhoz,
they were even criticizing his wife for wearing a scarf.
Yes, and suddenly he appeared as a very tall and a very handsome and as a very presidential figure, and therefore I will argue with you that he doesn't even need to do much. He just needs to be different, and he needs to be, you know, if he acts with dignity, people already will admire him and will forgive him anything.
Okay.
But don't we need some, you know, like real changes and steps taken by the new president, except for just, you know, walking around with dignity and not saying anything?
And not doing anything.
Well, not doing anything.
Well, at least, you know, we've asked for many things over the last 20 years. At the moment, you know, for me, it will be enough if you know, in the coming years, at least if we will avoid the embarrassment and humiliation that was provided, you know, by as a very tragic, it wasn't comical, it was very tragic self-destruction of the former president.
Okay, let's bring Bruce here. Bruce, usually you don't disagree, but if there is one thing you dare to disagree with Edil or Alia, what that would be on Jeenbekov's achievements or lack of it in his 100 days in office?
Before I get into the disagreement, I would agree that it's nice to have a president that doesn't cause a scandal every week. That's good. I mean, he's very cautious with his words. You know, but past that, the thing that I have a problem with is he hasn't shown a lot of leadership. I mean, he went on the trips and he met with some people. And I know that March is a busy month and there's the Central Asian President Summit. So maybe he'll shine on that. But there's been times where they really needed to have some leadership here. One is the thermal power plant in Bishkek. Now, he did comment on that, but not very forcefully. And once again, they pushed Isakov up in front, the prime minister, to like deal with this whole thing. And it would have been nice if Jeenbekov had got up and said, you know, this is a $380 million project. I don't get what's going on. You know, and if he wanted to make a public demonstration, that probably would have reached a lot of the hearts and minds of people. He would have been out there shoveling coal or something, you know, for the people that were about to freeze in the minus 27 degree weather. You know, so that would have been an opportunity where he could have shown some leadership. Now, another thing he's got to do is figure out what he's going to do about this deputy that's under arrest in Kazakhstan. You know, there's a lot of subtext to this kind of stuff. Now, the guy was caught, and it's a major embarrassment, without a doubt. But this is one of those moments, you know, Jeenbekov's laying low again. We don't know much about his position. What's he going to do about this guy? It seems from the video evidence in Kazakhstan that the guy is pretty guilty. And one of the things, one of the back messages you get from this whole incident is that Kazakhstan has, the relations between Kazakhstan and Kyrgyzstan are still not good after what Atambayev did. Otherwise, they wouldn't be making such a big deal out of this business in, you know, with the Demirbek Asilbek. So those are two things where it would be nice if Jeenbekov would come forward. He's missed his chance with the thermal power plant, but certainly with this thing with Kazakhstan, he should get up there and say, if this guy's dirty, you know, we're going to do our own investigation, you know, and we're with you, we'll help you out, and we'll put him in jail. Or he's innocent, and we're totally disgusted and amazed that you would arrest him and not hand him over to us instead.
Yeah, Bruce, what's his motivation behind lying low in this, and also lying low in terms of the plan that you mentioned, Vishka?
Well, I wish I knew. This is a good question. You know, whether this is all part of a behind-the-scenes struggle and he doesn't want to bring this out into the open just yet, or whether he just doesn't know. what's the proper reaction or what he how he should respond to this? I'm not sure. Like I said, especially with a thermal power plant, I figured for sure he would come up and do some speech in front of the people and say, you know, this, I'm outraged. I'm mobilizing everyone, the army, to help out people affected by this horrible tragedy. I'll get to the bottom of why a newly refurbished and rehabilitated plant that cost hundreds of millions of dollars failed, you know, at the worst possible time, something like that. But we just didn't get that, you know.
But it was Bruce, if I can, I will disagree with you. You know, Mohammed is looking for disagreement, but yeah. I will disagree with you. You know, Sooronbay Jeenbekov acted very wisely when the whole catastrophe with the central heating was taking place in Bishkek. He distanced himself because, you know, it wasn't his fault that the money was stolen and that the project, which was opened with much fanfare last August, you know, Atabay went on record that, you know, this is huge, you know, you're never going to freeze, no problem with electricity again. And suddenly, you know, he was, you know, the whole myth about Atabayev as a great achiever, as, you know, who brought stability and who brought improvement. You know, he didn't have much to count for his achievements, and he admitted himself. But, you know, he could have claimed that, yes, this, you know, heating plant in Bishkek was one of the few, you know, three or four of his notable achievements. And that collapsed at huge cost, to Atambayev and his whole legacy and his future political ambitions, the reputation of his appointee, you know, Prime Minister Isakov. And that's why Jeenbekov distanced himself. He just said that please clean up this mess and reinstate. But he politically, strategically, he acted very wise by taking distance. Because why interfere while, you know, the whole reputation of your opponents is collapsing?
But then, Adil, why he's not also getting involved in this, the matter of deputy that's in trouble in Kazakhstan?
You know, I think, you know, we have, of course, demanded that Sooronbay Jeenbekov acts very energetically and doesn't lose a day. And we were, most notably, of course, our former president, Rozo Tumbayeva, asked for it, that he cuts, you know, his own way and he doesn't shy away from, you know, using his new powers. You know, we've said that, you know, President Jeenbekov should feel responsibility to the people who has elected him and not be the friend of the former president only. But of course, we have to be realistic. You know, Sooronbay Jeenbekov, his character and his personality, he's very thankful. He cannot turn around and cut away Atambayev. He cannot, you know, and the Kyrgyz public also doesn't expect him. Few of us in the politics who cannot wait for it to happen, you know, they are only us. But Sooronbay Jeenbekov wants to feel more comfortable as a president, and he will never, you know, and I have repeated in the few places, we should not expect Sooronbay Jeenbekov to be the initiator of this divorce with Atambayev. It's not going to happen. He will, you know, act publicly. He will keep Niyazov for many years as his chief of staff. He will keep others. He will support publicly, you know, anything. He will do his own thing privately, but he will never humiliate Atambayev or publicly embarrass him. That's the thing. That's his character. But what we expect is, of course, that, you know, and we already see that how Atambayev camp is so nervous. They're leaking press, they're leaking articles, they're accusing, you know, Sooronbay Jeenbekov being related to this former head of customs, you know, Raim Milion, what we call him, Matraimov, and other things. But Sooronbay Jeenbekov is a very solid figure. Okay. He will do his own thing, but publicly, he's not going to show anything.
Okay, let's see what we will be discussing in a year. But it's been a really fascinating discussion. Just to conclude it with one final point. So, you know, Jeenbekov is what he is. And also, yeah, everyone had their own idea what he has done, what he should be doing. If you would be the advisor of Jeenbekov, Alia, What would be your advice for him going forward?
I can't really say it off the top of my head right now, but what he's doing right now is pretty much, I think, strategically is very wise, as Adil also has mentioned. I think slowly he will be sort of like, I don't know how to say it.
Alia, I will interrupt you. Please say something about women rights.
Why? In terms of what?
Because March 8th is next week.
Okay.
I think one fact that I actually liked about what Jane Beckup did was that I think he refused to charge, to take money from one of the media outlets, right, Adil, that he was suing.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, he won the trial.
Yes, but he dismissed 24KG, but he still is demanding money from Kabai Karabekov, of course.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, the, in terms of that, I think what he should be doing maybe is, you know, by the end of the Atambayev's term, everybody was being sort of like concerned about the freedom of speech in this country, right? About the media. So maybe as a new president, also to show that he's different from us, Atambayev, would it be great if with Jane Beckoff's presidency, the media would start feeling, you know, freer again, without these all these different stories that happened during Atambayev's rule, you know, when he sued several journalists and media outlets. So I really hope that in the case of Jane Beckoff, this is not going to happen. And in terms of mass media and freedom of speech, he's going to be more tolerant and more open-minded.
Okay, Bruce and Adil, briefly, please, your points on that, putting yourself in the position of his advisors, what would be the suggestion that he will be hearing from you guys?
I will, of course, second Alia, and I think, you know, this is the mainly generally expectation of the Kyrgyz public is that Sooronbay Jeenbekov could move swiftly to pardon many political prisoners, and most notably, of course, Omurbek Tekebayev, who are serving years in prison because they were put there by the former president. And Sooronbay Jeenbekov could immediately win a lot of credit for that. Actually, we expected that one of the final acts of Almazbek Atambayev will be to pardon and release you know, dozens of political prisoners. And he didn't do it. But more in general, of course, I will repeat that the rule of the game and of the personal chemistry between Atambayev and Jeenbekov is that Sooronbay Jeenbekov is not going to provoke openly. He will not initiate the public fracture, you know, with Atambayev. But we expect that the it will be Almazbek Atambayev who is, you know, will be fighting for his legacy quite very soon. But before that, for what to watch for, of course, this is the fate of the current cabinet. This is the moves to replace a security head and the head of the general prosecutor. And also, maybe one of the big battles will be around the charges against former leadership of the customs agency, who both sides now are trying to claim are related. You know, some people are saying that he was this customs corruption was generating lots of illicit money to for President Atambayev, and the press around him, they're trying to leak the story that actually this customs dirty money funded campaign of Sooronbay Jeenbekov. So there are several fights under the carpet of these bulldogs are fighting, but I just want to just say that the Kyrgyz public is watching very eagerly and following this story at the moment. There are many concerns going on for our democracy and for many freedoms, but at the moment we need to remove the main danger to Kyrgyz democracy. We need to resist this attempt to usurp power in unconstitutional way by the president who stepped down.
Okay, Bruce, final point. It's yours.
May I also add one little thing?
Sure.
This is a female rights activist. I would also express hope that Jeenbekov, during his or presidency would be appointing more females, you know, to a lot of leading positions, because that's what we lack at the moment, and what that's one of the main issues, you know, the gender equality issues in the politics of Kyrgyzstan at this point, because we're not even reaching in the parliament, we're not even reaching the 30% quota at the time. I think it went down to 16 or 18, unfortunately. So I really hope that sort of Jeenbekov will pay a lot of attention to women leadership and will also, you know, be encouraging a lot of female appointments to a lot of strategic positions.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Bruce.
If I'm his advisor,
yeah,
the first thing that I'm going to do is tell him, as soon as the weather gets better, you got to go around the country again. You might have to do it twice. You got to be out there with the people and let them see you and make sure that, you know, that you're speaking with local officials about what they need so that people get the idea that you're connected with them out there. He's fortunate in the fact that the relations with Uzbekistan are going to get better, and that is going to make a difference in the economy. Not a huge difference maybe, but it's going to make a difference. So if he's playing for a little time here, it shouldn't be too much longer before people start to see that there are some improvements, you know, with basic economics and trade because of Uzbekistan. Now, if he can heal the rift with Kazakhstan, even better, you know, that he's got this. So that's going to help the economy. So in between now and the time that the neighbors, that regional cooperation starts to make a difference on in Kyrgyzstan, he needs to be out and be seen as like a man of the people as much as possible and listening to everybody and you know, making sure that everyone gets a chance to see that he is in Batken and that he is in Talas and places like that.
Right. Okay. Thank you very much, Bruce Spanier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberties. Central Asia blog, Kishlak Owozi, and big thanks goes to Etil Baysalov, Bishkek-based civil and political activist, also Aliya Suranova, independent journalist and columnist. Thank you, colleagues, for your time and thoughts today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. It was very nice to have you. And this is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia podcast. Until next week, bye-bye.